À Barcelone.
In Korea.
À Paris. À Strasbourg.
In Venezuela.
In Argentina.
À Montréal.
Welcome to GLC, Global Labor Coverage. This is where TNT dans la rue puts you up to date with some labor news stories that your mainstream media outlets might have missed.
It's a continuation of struggle. It never stops.
Tous les troisièmes jeudis du mois, écoutez CKUT 90.3, une édition spéciale de Off the Hour.
TNT dans la rue, CKUT 90.3 FM's labor news show, heard every third Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m.
It's a continuation of struggle. It never stops. Continuation of struggle. It never stops.
This is Dave Blakeney from the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. You're listening to TNT dans la rue, CKUT 90.3. And doesn't capitalism really suck?
From England... is Bob Crow on?
The director of the school said.
Pardon me? Is Bob Crow on from England? Michael Ricks, you're on from the train drivers union?
Hi there.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. From Pakistan, Rubina Jamil, the president of the All Pakistan Trade Union Federation. Are you on? Rubina?
Wow.
Rubina, are you still on? You were on a minute ago. From Australia, I think we have both Sharon Barrow. Sharon, are you on?
Hello, Rubina. Is there Ellen Benjamin?
Okay, Rubina is on. Lee Hubbard from Australia?
Good afternoon. Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Very good. Is Sharon Barrows on yet?
Hello?
Is Sharon Barrows on?
Hello?
From Australia.
Hello, we are hearing you.
Okay, good. Is anyone on from Italy?
Yesterday, February 19th, a global phone press conference was organized by US LAW, which stands for US Labor Against War, with unions from several countries, US, Mexico, Canada, France, England, Tunisia, Pakistan, Brazil, Australia and Italy. This conference has been mostly ignored by mass media, and we understand that. We are just talking about 130 million workers expressing their opposition to the war. You can listen to the World Conference at www.uslaboragainstwar.org. This will be heard later on CKUT 90.3 FM.
...of the International Confederation of Arab Unions. Very good. Is anyone on from Brazil?
Yes.
From the excellent. From the CUT.
Brazil is also there. Okay.
Very good. Very good from Brazil. From Canada? Who all is on from Canada? Judy Darcy's on from the Public Employees Union?
That's right.
And Deborah?
Yes, Deborah Burke from the Canadian Union of Postal Workers.
And Carol Phillips?
Oh, great, Deborah. Deborah, great.
Hi.
And Carol Phillips is on from the Canadian Auto Workers. Carol, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Very good. Is anyone on from France?
Canadian Auto Workers is there.
Is anyone on from France?
Est-ce qu'il y a quelqu'un de la France sur la ligne?
Oui, et je suis c'est le secrétaire général de la Confédération internationale des syndicats arabes.
Oui, merci. On
Alan,
pour l'instant sur
Alan, will you translate, please?
De la France.
I want translation in English.
Alan, will you translate that into English?
Yes, that was a brother from the International Confederation of Arab Trade Unions who was greeting and saying he is on the line.
Very good. From Mexico.
This country, from the...
Who's on from Mexico?
Okay.
Is Benedicto on? Francisco Juarez? No one's on from Mexico.
Se encuentra alguien en la línea de México, por favor.
Ah, very good.
Se encuentra, this is checking in. ¿Alguien de México sobre la línea?
Perú.
Alan, will you translate that for everyone?
Sí, preguntando si hay alguien de la UNT o FAC de México. There's no one reporting from Mexico.
Okay. And are with the other trade unionists who are on, whose name...
Press conference. My name is Larry Cohen. I'm here in Washington, D.C. I'm the executive vice president of the Communication Workers of America. Greetings and welcome from my own union, the CWA, with 600,000 members. Greetings also from U.S. Labor Against the War. In a minute, we will introduce participants from around the world who are joining us. This call is historic. In just 10 days, over 200 unions and labor federations with 130 million members on five continents endorsed the International Labor Declaration opposing the war in Iraq. On this call today, there are participants representing major unions and labor federations on all five continents. This is the first time ever, I repeat, ever, that workers' organizations from all over the globe have united to communicate with a single united voice, a common message on a matter of urgent international concern: stop this war against Iraq. My own union, the CWA, on January 16th, adopted a resolution opposing the war. Since then, CWA local unions around the USA with more than 100,000 members have passed their own resolutions with their own discussions at union meetings around the country, and more are joining every day. Last Saturday, I was privileged to speak in New York City at a rally of hundreds of thousands opposing the war and opposing U.S. foreign policy, a policy that's not working for working families, a policy that supports not only a war in Iraq, but policies that encourage employers to export jobs out of this country without protecting workers' rights. U.S. labor against the war is an unprecedented effort to bring together American trade unionists at the local and national level to oppose our own foreign policy. Those who have created U.S. labor against the war are volunteering their own time and energy to make this happen, as we all are. So on behalf of all of us here, I welcome you and thank you for attending and participating in this historic press conference.
Welcome to TNT Dans la Rue. Today is Thursday, February 20th. My name is Peter, and we've got some other people here in the studio.
So, I'm here with Stéphane, and we had earlier with us Lise Martel from the FIC, la Fédération des infirmiers et infirmières du Québec, who is part of the coalition Échec à la guerre. Donc, nous allons donc jouer une interview avec Lise Martel de la FIC.
We're going to hear an interview right now with Lise Martel from the
FIC.
FIC, which is?
Fédération des infirmiers et infirmières du Québec.
That's the Quebec Nurses Union. Here goes.
Donc bonjour, Lise Martel. Vous êtes représentante de la Fédération des infirmiers et infirmières du Québec. Donc merci de vous joindre à nous. J'ai donc quelques questions à vous poser. Je commencerai en partant de la mobilisation qui s'est passée samedi dernier, donc le 15 février, où on a eu 150 000 personnes qui sont descendues dans les rues à Montréal et près de 11 millions de personnes à travers le monde. Actuellement, nous avons un gouvernement qui n'arrive pas à trouver de position claire quant à une action militaire unilatérale de l'administration Bush. Quelles sont les mobilisations à venir et les moyens déployés par votre syndicat et les syndicats canadiens dans leur ensemble, ainsi que la coalition Échec à la guerre, pour empêcher une participation du Canada à cette guerre?
Bon, comme vous avez mentionné dans une partie de l'intervention, on a un gouvernement qui n'a pas de position claire. Donc, la mobilisation qu'on vise actuellement au sein du collectif Échec à la guerre, c'est vraiment d'obtenir de notre gouvernement une position claire d'être contre la guerre. Et dans ce sens-là, les événements à venir, les moyens qui sont mis de l'avant actuellement, vise toujours cet objectif-là. On a une demande de rencontre auprès du premier ministre Chrétien qui va être placée cette semaine. Et c'est une rencontre qui se veut être avec une collaboration des coalitions qui sont au sein du Canada actuellement. Les gens sont à nous retourner la réponse là-dessus. Et je vous dirais qu'aller hier soir, là, il y avait, je pense, sept provinces, là, sept coalitions qui se retrouvent dans sept provinces différentes, qui était très, très, très intéressé à cette action-là. On a aussi mis de l'avant, mentionné lors de la manifestation, bien sûr, avec 150 000 personnes, pas tout le monde n'a compris, mais on a demandé à la population, en signe d'appui à la paix, d'être contre la guerre, de porter un vêtement blanc, un foulard, après les balcons, après les maisons, partout où les gens veulent bien le signaler. Et c'est quelque chose qu'on est à travailler actuellement et avec lequel on va faire un événement très bientôt. Je peux pas vous en dévoiler tous les aspects. Il y a un comité qui y travaille. Beaucoup de gens font le travail qui est à faire actuellement par rapport à cette mobilisation-là de façon bénévole le soir, les fins de semaine, la nuit. Donc, c'est beaucoup d'énergie qui sont mises par des personnes là-dessus. Au niveau des syndicats canadiens, je vous dirais que l'information que l'on connaît de l'implication des syndicats en général au Canada est par le biais des coalitions, comme ici au Québec, le collectif Échec à la guerre. C'est à l'intérieur de ce collectif-là qui regroupe toute forme d'organisation, excusez-moi, au Québec, à Montréal particulièrement. Et à l'intérieur de ces organisations-là, on retrouve effectivement plusieurs syndicats. Donc, c'est de cette façon-là actuellement que l'on connaît la participation des syndicats.
En termes de mobilisation des syndicats, est-ce que vous mobilisez énormément? Ce que pourrait arriver à avoir 150 000 personnes dans la rue? Je suppose que vous avez fait un travail de mobilisation très fort au sein même de votre syndicat. Est-ce qu'il y a des réponses positives des travailleurs de vos syndiqués?
Je vous dirais que l'information, nous mobilisons, nous sensibilisons les gens à l'interne de notre organisation par différents moyens, par le visionnement dans l'ordre d'instance qu'on a eu avec les délégués de nos infirmières. On a visionné les capsules d'information de ce qui se passe sur les sanctions en Irak. On diffuse toute l'information qui est possible d'être fait. On utilise nos outils de communication, nos revues pour donner de l'information. Et bien sûr, ça appartient au syndicat ensuite de cheminer l'information au niveau des membres. Ce qu'on sait des commentaires que nous avons reçus à ce jour, effectivement, les infirmières appuient ce mouvement contre la guerre, pour la paix, et ça nous donne l'énergie là pour continuer à travailler là-dedans. On apporte aussi au sein du collectif, bien sûr, le collectif qui regroupe toutes sortes d'organisations communautaires n'ont pas nécessairement tous des structures ou sont capables, là, par, ne serait-ce que l'aspect médiatique, convoquer des conférences de presse, les structures de services d'ordre, etc. Donc, les organisations syndicales, de par nos organisations comme telles, on peut apporter un support important là, au collectif.
Suite à la déclaration de M. George Bush affirmant que sa politique ne sera aucunement dictée par des protestataires et justifiant cette position au nom de la démocratie en ressortant la rhétorique sécuritaire propre à la majorité de nos démocraties modernes, quelle est la réaction des syndicats à cette déconsidération des mouvements sociaux en prenant en compte également du désintérêt des médias, des mass médias, pour une action comme cette conférence organisée hier par US Labor Against War, qui est une structure intersyndicale qui a lancé un appel et qui a été endossée par près de 200 syndicats de 53 pays représentant près de 130 millions de travailleurs.
Bon, en ce qui regarde les couvertures médiatiques, je pense que c'est quand même quelque chose qui est dénoncé depuis quelque temps, la concentration que l'on retrouve au niveau des médias. Bien sûr, pour nous, les médias devraient refléter les idées qui sont véhiculées, qui sont émises en général. Et cet aspect-là, je pense qu'il est à travailler, à gagner auprès de nos médias là, qui retrouvent et qui reprennent là, le collier de cette forme d'information-là qui n'est pas une information concentrée ou qui est filtrée ou quoi que ce soit. C'est ce que, je pense, beaucoup de monde perçoivent. Donc, ils ont du travail à faire pour corriger cet aspect-là. L'information, bien sûr, c'est extraordinaire, là, ce qui s'est fait avec US-là. Et je pense que ça a une importance qui ne devrait pas être minimisée, donc véhiculée auprès de la population et auprès des travailleurs.
Donc, vous nous disiez précédemment que vous avez fait une demande de rencontre avec Monsieur Chrétien. Donc, par rapport à la réaction, à la déclaration de Monsieur Bush qui disait qu'il ne changerait pas sa politique en fonction des personnes qui se mobiliseront dans la rue, qu'est-ce que vous attendez? Est-ce que vous pensez véritablement avoir une capacité de vous faire entendre que Monsieur Chrétien, lui, n'est pas fermé comme Monsieur Bush aux mouvements sociaux et à cette expression de...
Moi, je voudrais qu'à ce jour-là, publiquement, M. Chrétien n'a pas dit qu'il se foutait de ses citoyens et citoyennes du Canada. Donc, on continue vraiment de faire de mettre les efforts pour atteindre cette rencontre-là. Et en ce qui regarde M. Bush, ben moi, je vous dirais, je n'ai pas été du tout surprise là de son commentaire là-dessus, comme de tous les commentaires qu'il nous a amenés à date. Là, je n'en reprendrai qu'un parce que celui-là, je l'ai trouvé tellement épouvantable. Il y a très récemment, quand il annonçait à la population irakienne que les États-Unis viendraient les délivrer, et que pendant qu'il mentionne ça et qu'il annonce ça, des centaines de personnes meurent en Irak à cause des sanctions que les États-Unis ont réussi à faire imposer depuis 91, et ça tous les jours. Je peux pas croire que la population américaine continue de croire en son président.
Lors de la conférence donc, qui s'est tenue, la conférence téléphonique qui s'est tenue hier, on a entendu, entre autres, Mick Ricks, qui est le secrétaire général du syndicat anglais des cheminots et pompiers. Et il annonçait que, en cas de guerre, son syndicat encourage et mobilise les travailleurs ayant un lien direct ou non avec l'industrie de l'armement d'arrêter de travailler afin de bloquer l'effort de guerre. Est-ce que c'est quelque chose que nous pourrions entendre venant des syndicats canadiens, et ne serait-ce pas un moyen pour eux de faire comprendre clairement leur opposition à toute intervention militaire?
Je pense que ce qui a été mentionné, comme vous dites, là, par le syndicat des cheminots, bien sûr, c'est un objectif là, important de cesser de produire ce qui sert à faire la guerre. Mais nous, comme syndicat, en tout cas, je vous dirais rapidement qu'on n'a pas l'intention et on n'a pas l'habitude de dicter à d'autres ce qu'ils ont à faire. Je pense que chacun des syndicats, dans la mesure de ses moyens et ce qu'il est comme syndicat, quel type de travailleur il représente, peut trouver à l'intérieur même de ses rangs la façon qui peut être la plus positive pour appuyer cet effort-là de limiter ou d'empêcher la guerre. Là. Dans ce sens-là, les travailleurs qui sont dans l'armement, bien sûr, je pense qu'ils doivent avoir des réflexions parce que j'imagine comme toute population, comme tout homme ou femme qui ont des enfants, je pense pas que même un travailleur de l'armement est intéressé à voir son enfant lancer des bombes ou en recevoir. Fait que j'imagine que cette réflexion-là, ils vont la faire eux aussi, en tout cas, je l'espère.
Nous venons donc d'écouter Lise Martel de la FIC, qui fait également partie de la coalition Échec à la guerre. Vous pouvez participer à cet effort d'opposition à la guerre en aidant financièrement cette coalition. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur leur site internet www.fiiq.qc.ca. Une soirée bénéfice se tiendra également le 25 février au Club Soda, au 1225 Saint-Laurent, et tous les bénéfices de cette soirée iront à la coalition. C'est donc joint maintenant à nous Sabine Friesinger, désolé pour la prononciation, du CSU, Concordia Student Association. So we'll be back with an interview with Sabine Friesinger, who is here with us live in the studio, and we are going back to the US Law press conference.
And what will we be hearing exactly, Stefan?
We'll be listening. We're going to listen to someone from the CUT, C-U-T Federation, from Brazil.
Okay, and so we're going to hear in English and Spanish.
Julio Porta?
Portuguese. Yes.
Yes.
Are you speaking English? Você pode falar português se você quiser.
Are you speaking okay. English or Portuguese, Julio?
Portuguese.
Okay. Alan will translate. Thank you very much. Julio.
Boa tarde a todos os companheiros. Um abraço.
Good afternoon. Greetings.
Eu falo em nome da Executiva Nacional da CUT, Central Única dos Trabalhadores.
I speak in the name of the National Executive Committee of the CUT, the Unified Trade Union Federation of Brazil.
Que representa 9 milhões de sindicalizados em todo o país.
Which represents 9 million organized members across the Brazil.
20 membros da Executiva Nacional da CUT, que é a autoridade máxima da central,
assinaram
e endossaram o manifesto internacional proposto por US Labor Against the War.
20 members of our National Executive Committee, the highest body of our federation, have endorsed the international statement issued by U.S. Labor Against War.
E a CUT está engajada no Brasil na constituição de comitês contra a guerra no Iraque.
And CUT is involved in all regions of the country in the building of broad anti-war coalitions and committees against the U.S. against the war in Iraq.
Na jornada de 15 de fevereiro, em mais de 20 cidades importantes do país, ocorreram manifestações.
On the 15th of February, in 20 cities across Brazil, there were very sizable and important demonstrations.
As maiores delas em São Paulo, com 30 mil participantes, e no Rio de Janeiro, com 10 mil participantes.
The largest being in São Paulo, with 30,000 participants, and Rio de Janeiro, with 10,000 participants.
Para nós, da CUT, a luta contra a guerra de Bush.
For us in the CUT, the struggle against the Bush's war.
É uma entendemos como sendo não apenas aspecto militar.
For us, it's not simply a military war or has a military side.
Mas uma tentativa da administração Bush de impor o seu protetorado sobre o conjunto do planeta, ameaçando a soberania de todos os povos.
We see it more as an attempt by the Bush administration to impose a sort of U.S. protectorate over the entire world and to impose its domination and its will upon peoples against the sovereignty of peoples.
Na batalha contra a guerra que nós desenvolvemos aqui no Brasil,
the struggle against the war which we are carrying out here in Brazil,
vinculamos essa luta contra a implantação da área de livre comércio das Américas em solidariedade ao povo da Venezuela.
We are linking it to the struggle against the free trade area of the Americas and to the need to bring solidarity to the struggling people of Venezuela.
Nas manifestações de 15 de fevereiro,
in the demonstrations of the 15th of February,
por proposta do dirigente do movimento dos camponeses sem terra,
at the request of the leadership of the landless peasant movement,
João Pedro Estévez,
brother João Pedro Estévez,
foi adotada a resolução de, assim que a primeira bomba cair no Iraque, que esperamos impedir,
We adopted a resolution that in the event that we are unable to stop an invasion, a U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, which of course we are hoping to stop,
mas se lamentavelmente ocorrer,
but if should this occur on the date that it should occur,
imediatamente mobilizaremos os sindicatos, o Movimento Sem Terra, os estudantes para manifestações diante de consulados e embaixadas dos Estados Unidos.
We will mobilize immediately the landless peasant movement, students, trade unionists, and others, mass demonstrations in front of all the embassies and consulates of the United States and Brazil.
E por último, eu queria registrar a posição do governo brasileiro, presidente Lula.
I want to mention, lastly, the position of the president of our country, President Lula,
que é uma posição pela paz,
which who stands for peace,
contra uma solução bélica para o assunto Iraque,
against a bellicose solution in Iraq,
traduzindo o sentimento esmagadoramente majoritário no povo brasileiro,
and translating thereby the majority sentiment of the Brazilian people.
Thank you very much from Brazil. I'd like from Canada.
So welcome back to TNT dans la rue at CKUT 91.3 FM. Now here with us in studio, Sabine Fusinger from CSU. Happy to have you with us. So the coalition against war announced they are calling for a meeting with Jean Chrétien. But besides this, and the amazing work of mobilization, other action organized. Maybe you can tell us about all those action and mobilization which are coming.
Well, tomorrow there's an action being organized. It's early in the morning at 7 a.m. We're calling it Block the Empire. And basically it comes from people after the Saturday demonstration and after all the other demonstrations in the city against the war now that we've seen in the past few weeks, people came to the realization that we need to do more than demonstrations. 150,000 people in the street on Saturday somehow, I mean, did send some waves, I guess, to the leaders of our nations, mm-hmm. but it didn't. It's not enough. The war is still being talked about, and so in that sense, people are saying we need to take a more direct approach on this and really push it as far as we can and get people to start listening and to take an act and say, no, I oppose this war. And
okay, so this is tomorrow. And that is also for March 5th, something which is already planned.
Yeah, there's a call out that's been made. Actually, it came from the States, from students organizing there against the war, who are calling for a strike or a walkout of their classes in opposition to this war. And this is, here today, actually, at 6 o'clock at the Shatner building in McGill, students will be taking a vote on whether or not they want to go on strike as well on March 5th. And this vote will be taking place in student unions across the country, I would say, and also in the States.
Okay, so McGill
is on the vote tonight. And for Concordia, is there also mobilization? Like, does students from Concordia had already planned? Agree on this action?
At Concordia, we're going to be holding the vote on March 5th. There'll be a general assembly called for that. But throughout, like from now until then, there will be all sorts of actions mobilizing for this general assembly. Mm-hmm. Some direct actions, some tabling action too going on, mm-hmm. and in support of this campaign against the war.
Okay. The last time unions mobilized to react to the general political orientation and decision of Canada, like for me, was against the FTA at Quebec City. Now, can we say that things have changed, and can we tell that links are getting stronger between traditional union and student union, and also with other social justice organizations?
I think that in general, and the war sort of serves as a, or like this project of war that the U.S. has now, is it sort of serves as a catalyst to bring people together. Generally, most sectors of civil society are against this war, and so in that, people come together and start to realize, well, if we really want to stop this, we have to work together on it. And so I think it's very good to see this collaboration in building a movement. At the same time, we're having sort of growing pains as well. The movement is growing now. What direction will we give that movement, and how far will we be ready to go in this? And that's those are the questions that I guess we're all asking ourselves. But I think I'm pretty optimistic that something is happening, and it's just changing so fast. So it's good.
Yeah, we are Lise Martel. We're ending our interview, and she was saying that there is a reflection which is needed about until which point unions are ready to go. And so we see that students' unions are already ready to go to a strike and calling for a strike. And
I guess we should. If I'm sorry to interrupt, but
yeah.
I think one thing is, you know, if we set ourselves a goal and it's basically to stop this war, and if we're serious about taking this position and mobilizing and spending all this energy on getting the word out, then you know we have to sort of start thinking about taking more direct means to this, and this means you know also the union. So From the union part, I think it's important that we, from the labor union part, that we stop just hearing that this is what people want to see happen, ending the war. But we need to start seeing more. We are seeing it increasingly, but there has to be an increased movement towards that. Yeah.
When we listen to the person talking about from Brasilia, from CUT Federation, he was talking and making the link between this anti-war movement and the anti-globalization. Is it something that you can feel too? Is it something which is talking inside this anti-war movement?
For sure. I think people are making the links that the interests behind this war and the interests behind the globalization process, the economic globalization process, are the same interests. And so that's where we have to shoot for and go and organize against.
So thank you, Sabine. I don't know if Peter, maybe they have some question. Or
One thing I didn't hear about that I'd like to ask about is when the war, you know, as it looks as though it will start. I imagine you're going to be planning events around what happens when the war starts, you know, the day we hear they've started bombing or that they've moved the troops in.
Mm-hmm. The Saturday after, like the Saturday following that announcement, the unions and I guess the coalition Échec à la guerre is calling for a demonstration on, it starts at the same place as it started on Saturday, which is André Lévesque and Peel, I believe, yeah. And
The Confederation Square or Dorchester Square, whatever they call it.
Exactly, yeah. I never remember that. So on the Saturday following the announcement of the war, people will be mobilizing again.
And one other question. You were talking about the importance of labor unions getting involved with direct action of opposition to the war. Have you guys, by any chance, started meeting with labor unions to discuss this kind of stuff?
Well, for sure, for example, the actions on March 5th have been put on the table at the coalition. And, I mean, obviously there's a certain time and consultation process that has to happen within the unions before they can make a statement about that. Things happen faster on the student sector, I suppose. but yeah, we are in talks with them.
That's great. So we'll wait and see what happens. Thanks.
And so tomorrow morning, so what time is it starting?
7 a.m.
7 a.m.
So drink
get
your
up,
coffee.
Yeah, come with your coffee, wake up early, and show up and block the empire.
And the address is the corner is René Lévesque and Saint-Alexandre, which is where the U.S. consulate is located. And that's, once again, is at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. So if you'd like to show your opposition to the war, that would be a great next step for everyone to get involved with.
Yep.
And CKUT, I believe, is going to be broadcasting live from the scene.
Yeah, Friday morning after.
If you're getting up early tomorrow but you can't make it down there, put CKUT on and take a listen and see what's
happening. Or just listen to CKUT on your way to coming to the...
There you go. Action. That would be the perfect solution. So what do we have up next? I know you have something...
We're coming back to the U.S. Law press conference. And it's someone from England, Mike Riggs, from the Association Society of Locomotive Engineers and Firemen.
Okay. And now from Brazil, Julio Sorda?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you speaking English? Português, se você quiser.
Are you speaking
okay.
English or Portuguese, Julio?
Portuguese.
Okay. Alan will translate. Thank you very much. Julio.
Bom, boa tarde a todos os companheiros. Abraço.
Yeah, good afternoon. Greetings.
Eu falo em nome da Executiva Nacional da CUT, Central Única dos Trabalhadores.
I speak in the name of the National Executive Committee of the CUT, the Unified Trade Union Federation of Brazil.
Que representa 9 milhões de...
Bob, this is David Bacon. I'd like to ask Mick Riggs from AFLEF if he expects there to be other actions in which workers refuse to handle war material for the war, and also the representatives of other union federations if they foresee similar actions in their countries.
So let's hear first, I guess, from Great Britain, and then, Alan, if you could ask Enzo to respond also.
Yes. Hi there. This is Mick. I do expect issues of workers refusing to carry out work that will... enhance the war effort. We have demanded that the British UC also recalls its conference. This is not just a demand by my union, but five other trade unions affiliated to the British TUC. And one of the rules of the British TUC, Rule 8K, dates back to 1918, where it states that if war is contemplated or is imminent, then the Congress of the TUC should be recalled so that industrial or proposed industrial action can be considered. So this is a very serious issue for the British trade union movement. And one of the pleasing things that took place on Saturday in London and in Glasgow in Scotland on Saturday, well over 2 million people were present on that demonstration, and there were literally hundreds of thousands of trade unionists in Britain and their unions nationally represented on that demonstration and also speaking from platforms. So yes, the possibility of industrial action, increasing my union, will possibly take place, but also within the movement in Britain and in many factories and other industries, so that our protests against this dash for oil and regime change that Bush has on his agenda can be stopped.
Thank you.
Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline. But on the Che Guevara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over the luxury's disappointment. So he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her, but he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner. In the Soviet Union, the scientist is blinded by the resumption.
This is the CKUT Labor News Show, TNT dans la rue. TNT dans la rue is a special presentation of CKUT's community news program, Off the Hour. I'd like to welcome David Blakeney, National Union Representative of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, to the show. David recently returned from Argentina, which is in economic and political chaos as a consequence of neoliberal economic policies, official corruption, and IMF-enforced austerity measures. While there, he met with a variety of worker and popular groups. So welcome back to the show, David. It's good to be talking to you.
Thanks, Peter.
Okay, it's my understanding that the current uprising in Argentina is rooted in real desperation. Since Argentina is a very stratified society, could you tell us a bit more about the current reality there in terms of each of the different economic classes?
Well, you know, Argentina once had an economy roughly the size of Canada's, and it's completely imploded. I mean, some of that started years ago and certainly accelerated during the military dictatorship of the 70s and 80s, and has carried on into the present under so-called democratically elected governments. But the situation in Argentina today is quite a desperate one. I mean, Argentina followed virtually every IMF dictate and policy. They were told this is the way to do it. You know, you'll be a model of growth and a strong economy. And the reverse has happened. And the devaluation and the run on the peso and people just pulling up stakes and leaving the country, investors and so on, have really left chaos not only for the poor but for the entire, I guess, middle classes. Many of them haven't paid their rent or mortgages in over a year. And this creates a very a difficult situation right now for the authorities, because to call in those loans means going after basically the entire middle class risk, I guess, a situation of revolutionary proportions, which, as you know, in December of 2001, there were huge street protests where people just spontaneously came into the streets and, and the slogan was throw them all out. In fact, the subsequent elections, of which they had six in the next year, the most votes were cast in those elections for throw them all out, which is not a party. It was just people writing this on their ballot because voting is mandatory in Argentina. And I think virtually everyone, including the middle classes, felt like there was no one worth supporting.
Could we look back at the roots of this situation? From what I've been reading and hearing about, it seems as though it really goes back to the 1970s.
Yeah.
I mean, you were talking about neoliberal economic policies that they adopted. Could you just talk a little more about that?
Well, you know, there's a belief that first of all, the repression started, you know, with the military dictatorship. But in fact, many Argentinians told me that it started under the Peronist government that was there prior to the military taking over. But the military adopted, and some say, you know, like Pinochet in Chile, were really amongst the first to embrace the neoliberal model, became sort of the experiment, as it were. And the dictatorship certainly pursued that avenue, and subsequent governments as well. So there are mass privatizations, sell-off of state industries, basically a laissez-faire, you know, so-called free market society, which is sort of an odd term anyway. Free for whom, I guess you could ask. But as a result, by 2001, the currency was devalued and became virtually worthless, and people, investors fled the country,
including Canadian investors, right?
Yeah, well, included the Bank of Nova Scotia, were the first bank to pull up stakes and get out. I mean, you got to think of a similar situation in Canada and Quebec, where you know people who would show up to the bank to withdraw their money found out it just wasn't there, that they couldn't withdraw their money, that they couldn't pick up their pensions, that they couldn't cash in their GICs, you know, and so on. Which banks always like to tell us are highly secure, which wasn't the case at all. In fact, even to this day in Buenos Aires, you can go to a bank machine and just find, well, yeah, you can insert your card, but there's no money in the machine. So that creates quite a unique situation. Every day, there since 2001, there have been bank protests in the tourist areas. Major banks are covered in corrugated metal because people would literally tear them apart. And you see senior citizens out there with spray paint and paintbrushes and things, writing slogans like "murderers" and "thieves."
Could you tell me a little more about that? Is that the middle class who were out protesting?
Yeah, precisely. I don't think there's a great, at least from my experience in speaking with them, it's not like a great, you know, sort of big picture analysis of capitalism. It's purely, I put money here, it was supposed to be safe, and it's gone, and somebody took it, and it's somewhere else, and that's mine. You know, it's sort of that kind of attitude.
Sure.
So on the one hand, you want to say, well, you know, that's what happens under capitalism. You take your chances, and you speculate, and you get burned, right? But in this case, it wasn't just people losing money in the stock markets. It was actually their savings. And so I think there's a lot of bitterness. The police just kind of stand by and watch this happen.
Right.
Varying opinions on whether repression will increase or just around the corner. But as I said earlier, in order for them to repress, they're going to have to repress a lot of people at the same time. The divide and conquer thing I don't think is going to work too well in Argentina right now.
Yep. Could you talk a little bit more about the situation for the poorer classes, the working classes in Argentina? I think for them, I mean, it's far more desperate than losing their GICs and so on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the big story, I think, in Argentina, and also probably the most positive thing that I've seen are people occupying lands and factories, clearly saying, you know, we're going to, as a class of people, we're going to take over stuff. We're not going to be robbed anymore. We're not going to rely on electoral politics, which has just been a disaster for Argentina. We're just going to take stuff that belongs to us, and we're going to organize collectively. So I guess some of the most magical experiences that I witnessed were citizen councils, people in poor barrios and neighborhoods coming out at night, sitting around in a circle, people of all ages, but particularly older women, you know, taking the lead of saying, so what are we going to do? You know, right now they fought and won for 150 pesos a month.
How much is that?
Oh, it's about like maybe 70 bucks Canadian or something.
So $70 a month.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and to earn this money, you know, sort of like a sort of workfare kind of thing. Like you've got to work for the state for 4 hours a day, you know, cleaning up garbage or sweeping streets or whatever. In some of the more progressive barrios, they've actually refused to do that, but have still continued to get their 150 pesos by fighting for it, basically. Bridge blockades and road blockades and things on ongoing things like that. Saying, well, we will take the 150 pesos, but we will decide as a community what we'll do with those pesos. And some, they're producing bread for half of the price of the market price, employing local people in the barrio, but making sure other people in the barrio can get cheap bread. That's just one example. They're trying to create structures outside the regular economy, but it's difficult without investment coming from anywhere. And the state, this is 150 per person. Right now the state is saying, well, we're going to change that to 150 per family. When I was there, there was a bridge blockade, not only to preserve the 150 per person, but also to increase it to 300 per person a month.
Right, so the cutbacks are coming sort of courtesy of the IMF, who are insisting that the Argentinian state cut back on its costs.
Oh, absolutely, but in a fashion that's not all at once, but sort of subtle and slow. Not subtle and slow, of course, if you're someone trying to survive on 150 pesos a month, but in terms of not going after everybody, they're desperately trying to figure out ways they can divide the movement and play off people against each other. And it has had some, I guess, some effect, but not enough in order for the IMF to call in the loans. And one interesting project that I saw was in a barrio where people saw, you know, there's all this vacant land around, you know, covered in dog shit, just going to the rats. And when I was there, I was at a council, citizen council. A decision was taken to occupy it the following Monday. It turned out that this land was actually owned by a trade union. And in the time between the meeting we had on the street and that Monday, the trade union acquiesced and just turned over the land, said, sure, you can use it. You can grow food there and stuff. The other example I saw that was very inspiring was a fabrics factory where...
This is the factory occupations you're talking about now.
Yeah. I should have mentioned that earlier, but there, in addition to the land occupations, there are over 200 factories occupied right now.
This is right across the country?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Buenos Aires was actually the last place where these occupations started taking place. They originated in the south and just sort of grew and continued. But one classic example that I can think of was the women in the fabrics factory, you know, putting together suits and stuff. We're down to getting paid 2 pesos.
And how much is that?
That's like about 80 cents or something.
80 cents a day or?
A week.
A week.
Yeah. I'm sorry, a month. I'm sorry. Now, why would anybody work on so little? Well, because the unemployment rate was so high, and even officially they put it at well over 20%, with another 20-odd percent underemployed. And that's according to the state, so you can bet that it's far worse. And so in this case, why didn't people give up their jobs? Well, because there were no other jobs. And if the economy picked up and things came back, at least these women would have jobs. And that was the way it was explained to me.
Mm-hmm.
However, at some point enough was enough. They realized that we're still selling suits, but we're getting paid crap for money, for wages. And the feeling was is that the owner was really using them to cover his own speculative losses, his losses on the market, and cover his own debts. So they decided to lock him out and take over the factory.
And
which
how
did
that happen? How do you lock out your owner?
Well, you just don't let him come in. You just start running the factory and have someone there 24 hours a day. To keep out, and they also fired the bosses, the supervisors, and in this case, the union. That doesn't happen in all cases, but in this case, they kicked out the union too.
In some cases, the union is quite suspect, I suppose, in terms of what it who it serves.
Yeah, there are two labor federations, main labor federations in Argentina, and the old one, the Peronist one. I mean, it collaborated with the dictatorship. In fact, the postal worker union, I discovered, postal union leaders would identify leftist activists in the workplace, and they would soon disappear. So that's how devious it was in those days. And in many cases, some of the trade unions are much closer to the employers than they are to the workers. And when the people would complain about these measly wages, they were told, well, you know, it's a special period, and there's nothing we can do, and this is the way you can hang on to your job. So anyway, as a result of these folks getting 2 pesos a month, having taken over the factory, they now average 600 pesos each a month. So that would give you an idea of how much money was being siphoned off to pay to go after bad debts and bad investments.
So it must have been quite inspiring to visit that factory. Were you talking to workers? And,
Yeah. They had a daycare set up before. They couldn't bring their kids before. They were fired if they even talked. Now, you know, people can talk. They can rotate jobs. There's about 60 people who work there. They've elected a council of 8 to represent them. But they've had to learn other things like buying and selling. And
who's doing all that kind of work?
Well, the workers who were before maybe sitting at a sewing machine have learned how to do other tasks. The police have showed up a few times. That's why they have people volunteer to be there 24 hours. When this happens, other occupations and other MTDs, which are the barrio groups that have set up their own structures, immediately are mobilized into action. So again, you know, there's cross solidarity going on, a meaningful solidarity where people just don't let others go down without a fight. And in this case, the police wind up backing off. That's not to say that there's not repression. There's over 2,000 legal charges going on across the country right now around these occupations and the MTDs.
So we've really yet to see how all this is going to play out.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, you hear different things. Some feel repression is just around the corner. Others feel that the government is still just too weak and too divided to be able to do anything. And there's no question that the conservatives in government are completely divided and is giving space, I think, for other things to happen.
You also mentioned to me earlier today that you met up with some of the Madres, the Mothers of the Disappeared.
Yeah.
Could you maybe talk a bit about that and talk about the new political role they've been undertaking in Argentina?
Well, you know, what's inspiring about the Madres is not only that they that after all these years they come out and hold demonstrations every week around the loss of their children. I mean, you know, 30,000 disappeared in the 70s and 80s. They use it as a way to look forward and to deal with the present. And when I ask them about this, why, you know, if they're mourning their losses, they say, well, the way we mourn is to fight for the present and fight for the future. We're fighting against the IMF because that's what our kids would have done. We're fighting free trade and neoliberalism because that's what our kids would have done. We're fighting repression because that's what our kids would have done. So they're using tragic experience to not just be mournful and you know, sort of get into self-flagellation, which would be completely understandable under the circumstances, but using it as a really to create a political context to move forward and fight for something different. And so they've also become a strong voice, and a strong voice, too, in support of the what are called the Picoteros.
Who are the Picoteros?
Well, the Picoteros, there's these organizations called MTDs. They're not really organizations. They're like collectives, the MTDs from the barrios. And they come out, and they lead the bridge blockades and the road blockades. And so they're called Picoteros, which really means, roughly translated, picketers. And so they're very supportive of the Picoteros.
Okay.
And when the police attempt repression against them, they come out quite vocally against it, saying, no, they're just fighting for the same things we are.
Okay, yeah. Well, why don't you talk a bit about the Picoteros and what kind of actions have they been involved in? And I have the impression that they're not a unified group. There's sort of different factions within that movement.
Yeah, there are different factions that have been created, unfortunately. Last June, the state murdered two people at a occupation, a bridge occupation. Well, actually, the same bridge that I attended an occupation last week. It seemed that people I talked to had a real sense that something was happening. There had been over 200 road blockades and very little police reaction, but people said 3 days leading up to this, there was a real sense that something was going to happen. There was more, the police were becoming more aggressive, they were more visible, they looked a little meaner and angrier. And at this particular one that took place in June of last year, in the train, they chased some people in the train station, and when it was over, one person had been shot and was bleeding to death. Another person came up to basically cradle him because the police weren't giving him any medical attention.
Yeah.
And the police shot him in the back of the head. For the next couple of days, the media claimed that, well, this was a result of Picoteros just fighting each other. In fact, the leader of one of the trade unions, who has a faction of Picoteros in the trade union, the CTA, went on national TV and also spoke to the major conservative paper and said, well, you know, there's good Picoteros and there're bad Picoteros, and bad Picoteros are just doing it to each other, not helping the sort of the cause at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, Indy Media was present and were able to get shots revealing the police had committed cold blood murder, that it wasn't Picoteros being violent or fighting each other.
Right, so and people could find that on Indy Media at www.indymedia.org.
Yeah, and eventually it translated over to the mainstream media. They couldn't hide it anymore. And they showed the chief of police basically holding one of the dying victims that he just shot his by the hair and smiling like he's holding a trophy. This became a bit of a scandal in Argentina, and the CTA, the same organization that has this group of Picoteros in it, called for a general strike. So there was a public reaction. It took a few days, people remembered the dictatorship and didn't want it to come back. So, but at the same time, the CTA, the Trade Union Federation, and the non-Peronist one, the newer one, they have a branch of Picoteros, and sort of in a unique way, as a trade union federation, give a seat, a vice presidency to the unemployed and treat them like real workers. But as I learned, they treat them as real workers as long as they're their workers, their unemployed workers.
Okay.
A lot of people left the CTA, a lot of Picoteros left after those comments. So it's an unfortunate situation right now where there is division being created, and you can bet the authorities are looking to create as many divides as they can between unemployed workers.
Yeah, so to sort of sum up maybe the situation in Argentina, it really feels as though things are in flux at the moment, and yeah, that you've got the right wing that hasn't decided how it's going to deal with this situation, and the left is a little bit split as well.
Yeah,
lots of community organizations, but perhaps not a large sort of strong national consciousness on how they should proceed.
I think you're quite right. That's an accurate picture. In December 19th and 20th of 2000, when the big 2001, when the big protests happened, neither the CTA nor the political parties unfurled their banners in the demonstrations. And what I was told is that they would have been told to put them away. That people were really, when they were saying throw them all out, they were talking about just everything, the IMF,
right,
the World Bank, the politicians, the trade unions, and so on. One can argue the merits, pro and con around this, but that was what people were expressing at that time and place. So, yeah, there's no sort of organized, I suppose, institutionalized left.
Right.
The Trotskyist parties have grown quite a bit, and you're starting to see them present in a lot of the demonstrations,
mm-hmm,
but still, there's no sort of mainstream political force, I guess.
And I think one of the breaks on the situation is people's awareness of what it was like under the military dictatorship. So
yeah,
there's a real fear of returning to a sort of a right-wing authoritarian regime.
No question. No question. And my sense is that people are going to block it. In the 70s and 80s, a lot of the middle class would say things like, well, they must have deserved it. You know, similar to ways here. I mean, people aren't disappearing here, but you know, when people get charged at demonstrations for no reason and stuff, you know, I think there is a
in New York City at the anti-war demonstrations, for instance.
Yeah. You know, I think there's an assumption by people who aren't present that, well, they must have done something wrong, they must have broken the law or something, you know. And this was very much a theme I heard again and again down in Buenos Aires, that this is what people, the middle class, were saying in the 70s and 80s. Well, you know, so and so disappeared, they must have done something really wrong. They must have been a terrorist or something. They're not saying that now.
Right.
Cat's out of the bag, and I think that makes a huge difference compared to those days.
Well, this is a story that we here at CKUT, I'm sure, are going to be watching very closely.
Sure.
I'd like to thank you for your time and for doing the interview.
Oh, thanks a lot, Peter. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Thanks again. We've been listening to David Blakeney, who is from the National Union Representative from the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. David Blakeney recently returned from a trip to Argentina. So thanks again, David, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Peter?
Yeah, still there. Once again, that was David Blakeney here on CKUT talking about his trip to Argentina. A little bit of tango music in the background there for you. We're just wrapping up the show. I've got an announcement to make for you. On Saturday, March 1st, 2003, at 7:30 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture on Côte des Neiges, that's 5290 Chemin de la Côte des Neiges, you can participate in or go see a political cabaret. And all proceeds will go to the Montreal International Solidarity Affair Delegation 2003. The ISA, International Solidarity Affair, is hosted by the largest labor organization in the Philippines, and it gathers more than 200 labor, human rights, and community workers from around the world each year. You've been listening to TNT Dans la Rue. You can contact us at a labor show at ckut.ca. That's labor without a U, unfortunately. And our website for the station is www.ckut.ca. This news program is a production of CKUT's news department, which can be reached at 514-398-6787, extension 0283.
Et nous vous retrouverons le mois prochain, sans guerre, et peut-être avec un empire ébréché, où nous n'aurons plus qu'à nous engager. Alors, au mois prochain.
That's right. Listen to our show every third Thursday of the month. Thanks for listening.
Judy Darcy, President of the Canadian Union of Public Employees. We represent over 500,000 workers in our Canada's largest union, but the Canadian auto workers and the Canadian Union of Postal Workers are also on the line and have been very, very actively involved in mobilizing their members in Canada, as we have, against the war. Our union took a strong position in December that peace is a workers' issue, peace is a trade union issue, and we've been working hard to educate and mobilize our members since then, working to get resolutions passed at municipal councils, organizing educational sessions with our members, and very importantly, calling on our members to participate in marches and across the country. In Canada on February the 15th, there were marches in an event against the war in Iraq in 77 cities and towns across the country, the largest in Montreal with 150,000 people in the streets, but tens of thousands in other cities as well. The position we take very clearly is that our Canadian government should get off the fence. They've gone back and forth about where they stand. Canadian public opinion is overwhelmingly against the war. Our Canadian government wants to try and be friends with George Bush, but at the same time, they know where the Canadian people stand. So we're telling them, get off the fence, take a clear position against the war in Iraq, and we're also telling them that they should be world leaders in saying that instead of waging war on Iraq, they should be waging war on poverty, they should be waging war on inequality and homelessness, they should be waging war on the HIV/AIDS pandemic in Africa. The people of Canada and the trade union movement says very, very strongly, we want no part of this war, and we will continue to work and to mobilize and do everything we can with our sisters and brothers around the world to bring about a peaceful solution to the situation in Iraq. And that's the commitment of QP, the other unions on the line, and I know many other unions that weren't able to be on the line today.
Thank you very much. Hi, this is Cyrus Chestnut, and you're listening to the greasiest, bluesiest, the delicacy, CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.